And do turn with me to Genesis and chapter 18. Genesis and chapter 18. And as we do so, let me quickly mention the fact that we have begun the descent, beginning with this sermon. For the last eight or so messages, we have been dealing with the more didactic teachings concerning the subject of Christian hospitality. And having done that, now we are turning our attention and we'll be looking at a number of actual examples in the Bible where individuals exercised hospitality in the biblical context. And I think it is important that we deliberately do so, because practice is always best learned by these two approaches. On the one hand, you need to learn through precept, through instruction, through doctrine, but that is hardly ever enough. You also need to learn through example, by looking at somebody who knows the actual practice and he is engaged in it. That's the best way in which you learn how to practice something. Those of you who perhaps have studied medicine will realize that after you have been taught, you are consequently put into a context where you are working side by side with somebody who knows that work. And as you are observing him, as he is observing you, through practice, sooner, hopefully, rather than later, you are licensed to practice on your own. It is recognized that simply having classroom instruction will not be enough. You need to see a master at work. You need to be challenged in order to rise to certain standards that have already been set and you can see them in practice. And that's what we're really doing here. We have learned through a number of messages concerning what the Bible has to say over Christian hospitality, or as we have called it, over being lovers of strangers. Very well then, when that lovers of strangers put on clothes and shoes and began to walk in the streets in which we walk, what did it look like? And the very first example we are looking at is that of Abraham, the father of the faithful. And the account is found for us in the first 16 verses of Genesis chapter 18. The Bible reads, "The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great tree of Mamre, where he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, 'If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant.' 'Very well,' they answered, 'do as you say.' So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. 'Quickly,' he said, 'get three seers of fine flour and knead it and baked some bread. Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. "Where is your wife, Sarah?" they asked him. "There, in the tent," he said. Then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years. And Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, "After I'm worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I did not laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh." When the men got up to leave, they looked down toward Sodom, and Abraham walked along with them to see them on their way. Well, the account that I have just read to you is one that I'm sure all of us are familiar with, or at least most of us are. And most of the times when we deal with this passage, we deal with it out of curiosity. We want to understand how the Lord appeared to Abraham. Was it the Lord Jesus who appeared with his, but angels who appeared, how did they appear to him? Did Abraham know that this was the Lord who was coming to have dealings with me or not? And is the Lord one of these three, or were these three apart from the Lord, and so on? These are the kind of things that occupy our minds when we come to a passage such as this. And if that's your curiosity, I have some bad news for you. I'm not going to answer any of those questions tonight. What I want to do is bypass all that and simply see something of the attitude of Abraham with respect to the whole subject of hospitality. And it seems to me that when we do that, we learn something that we often bypass and consequently hardly ever get challenged by his example. And what we learn from him, therefore, are some characteristics of hospitality when that hospitality is from the heart. When hospitality is truly and genuinely born out of brotherly love. When it is heartfelt. And there's no doubt about it. When you contrast the way in which Abraham went about his love of strangers and the way in which we often go about it, there is a real challenge here that ought to make us amend our ways. For instance, if we are truly exercising hospitality from the heart, it's very evident from this passage that we will take the initiative. The initiative is going to come from us. We are not going to wait until we are asked to provide it. It's going to be born out of our hearts. It's going to be an overflowing of our own hearts that expresses itself in hospitality. And that's what I want us to notice quickly in this passage of Scripture. First of all, notice the time. We are told in verse 1, the Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. And that little phrase, heat of the day, is simply referring to early afternoon. That's all it's referring to. You've just gone past the period when you're supposed to have probably had your lunch, and it is going into the afternoon. It is extremely hot, especially in the desert lands in which the Bible was set. And so any individuals who are traveling and have arrived into a city, at that time, they are tired, they are hungry, they are thirsty, they are dusty. They were not traveling by car, and even if they would have traveled part of the way by camel, part of it would have been used in terms of walking, and consequently they would have a lot of dust and sand on their feet. So Abraham perceived this when he saw these three men. We are told there in verse 2, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. And when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. And that bowing low is a form of greeting, but it is greeting those that you really, really respect. And there's no doubt about it that even the way he spoke when he said to them, verse 5, if I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. There was something about these visitors passing through town that suggested to him that they were important people. And consequently, he would bow down to them. Most likely, it wasn't in terms of age. Because remember what we are told later on concerning Abraham. He was in the latter part of his life, the evening of his life, including his wife. And that is the reason why the whole issue of childbearing was something they did not expect to come up at this stage. But I think it was to do with some kind of station in life that made him look at them and say, here are important people on a long journey, but clearly they are now tired, they are now hungry and thirsty, and of course they are dusty. He may also have noticed that they were carrying the kind of extra luggage that travelers normally carry. And it wasn't probably on their shoulders, it may have been on some camels that they were with. But clearly everything showed that here were individuals on a journey. What did he do? Well, we are told in this passage, he quickly left the entrance of his tent where he was sitting under a tree. He quickly rushed over to them, bowed down to them, and entreated them that he may minister to them. He pleaded with them, as we notice in the language that is there. Verse 4, let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way now that you have come to your servant. Clearly, His initiative was to meet their need. He knew that they would be fairly dirty from the walking. Therefore, water to wash their feet. He knew they would be hungry. Therefore, some food to minister to them. He knew that the heat of the sun, remember, it was just afternoon time, would really be beating down upon them. Therefore, to sit under a tree would provide them with a shade, and it would be an appropriate place for rest. And those are the issues. He is immediately entreating them, saying, come, I want to meet these needs that you have as travelers. Well, brethren, that example in itself speaks to us that if hospitality is to be from the heart, we must do the same. We must take the initiative. It must be our eyes that must cause us to see the needs of the strangers and consequently be moved from our hearts to do what we can to meet those needs. If you are always sitting, waiting to be asked, always waiting to be asked, there's a problem. Because it ought to be out of the abundance of the heart that you should consequently seek to minister to the strangers. Now, granted, every so often you will be asked, but that must not become the default mode. Because it's about brotherly love. It's about concern for brethren in the Lord who are vulnerable because they have come into a context that is not their home context. Or the situation itself has taken away what would normally previously would have been their comfort zone. And therefore, your mind immediately begins to process. A person to whom this has happened, a stranger who's come into this situation, surely this is what they need. And you immediately make the offer. Now, I can multiply examples. But the very reason why I have done this series is because God has blessed us as a church with so many visitors, literally every weekend. And it's very easy for us at the end of the service to still simply rush to John and rush to Mary, rush to the same old good friends so that we can catch up with holy gossip for the week. And we fail to see, to perceive with our own initiative that here is a strange face standing alone under a tree. Surely this means this person must be a visitor. I can go up to them and find out concerning their situation and see what needs to be done in order to minister to them. Simple initiative. But you know, it makes a world of a difference. Now, I don't consider myself to be a very hospitable person. But last Friday, a school boy from Eagle's Nest was only picked up probably about 19 hours by the parents. And I found the boy sitting at the corner there, alone. Now, a lot of people were passing by, but they were busy preparing for a wedding rehearsal. So they were just going right past me. And of course, very happy to meet one another, because some were coming from outside town. They've come for the wedding! But the poor boy was just being passed through. As I said, I'm not the best of examples, but I sat down with him and soon discovered that he lives across town. I mean, Chisamba, he mentioned. I had, you know, that packet of jiggies in the car that makes all kinds of people chase after somebody. So I said to him, would you like some? And when he said yes, I pressed. Up to that point, he wasn't very sociable. He wasn't. But I pressed the automatic thing. He went to the car, got it. You should have seen the smile on the boy's face. From that point onwards, we were great friends. I mean, we talked. We could have gone on into the night. Thankfully, I also had some sweets in the car, so when we finished his jiggies, I went back to the car, got, there were two sweets. I couldn't separate them. He offered to separate them for me, so the two of us could enjoy our time together. And we chatted. I could give you his biographical details, because he was now very open, until finally the father arrived to pick him up. I'm pretty sure that that boy and me will be close friends for quite some time to come. Now, as I said, I don't do that every day. I don't do that every week. But when I was studying this passage, it came to me what it meant to that boy for the 2 hours or so he was waiting for a dad who said he was coming and wasn't coming. Let us notice with our own eyes those individuals that are vulnerable, that are, as it were, away from home, away from the comfort zone. God wants to minister to them through us and through brotherly love. And if it's from the heart, there's going to be initiative on our part. Again, learning from Abraham, if we are truly exercising hospitality from the heart, we will quickly, notice the word there, quickly take the necessary steps to meet the needs of the strangers. We will accommodate him by making the necessary changes. Notice that Abraham was not ready for the strangers when he invited them. He wasn't. And consequently, the moment they said, very well, do as you say, you know what it meant for Abraham? Press the panic button. He was an old man. But look at the amount of running he had to do. Just 10 days. Verse 6. So Abraham hurried, literally, ran into the tent to Sarah. And you notice the first word there. Quick, he said. Get 3 seers of fine flour and knead it and bake some bread. We are in trouble. Visitors have come. Well, sorry. I invited them. So we need to make some quick changes. Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who ran to prepare it. I mean, everybody's running around suddenly. Individuals need to be ministered to. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. I think the point is obvious. He wasn't ready for them. But you see, if we are always thinking about ourselves, starting with ourselves, we will never exercise true hospitality. Because we'll hardly ever be ready. And you know the kind of discussions that often happen in the car park. Yeah? Sort of go to your spouse and say, I'm thinking of inviting. Yeah, but there's nothing in the fridge. Close the matter. There's nothing in the fridge. Yes, there was nothing in the fridge. Yeah. That's why Abraham had to do so much running around. There was nothing in the fridge. They literally had to slaughter an animal. Skin it. Probably just skinned the leg for the time being. Everything else will handle later. Cook it. And then together with the milk and yogurt and so on, finally present to these visitors. You see, where there is a will, there is a way. That's the message here. If your heart is really interested in ministering to the vulnerable, to the strangers, those who are clearly in need, you will not start with yourself, you will start with them. And having seen their need, begin to quickly find ways in which you can deal with the situation. And it's amazing that what your heart wants to do, you finally do it. You finally do it. You know, when I was growing up, after my mom died, we were raised by another family. My mother's immediate elder sister. And I've never forgotten a statement she often produced when we would say to her, you know, like to bring our friends home and so on. And she would often say this phrase in Bemba, I would translate it into English, although we lose some of it. She used to say, Aka kuriata ka chepa. Ifi chepa fiak fuala. Now that simply means food can never be too small. What becomes small is clothing. I mean, with respect to clothing, some of you can't give me your clothes, even if your heart wanted to. Because your clothes can't get past my elbow. I'm trying to get it in. It's too small. But all of you can share with me what you have by way of food. All of you. Unless you just don't want to. So that little phrase stuck in my mind. Where there is a will, there is a way. And with respect to hospitality, therefore, it can definitely happen. So, if hospitality is to be from the heart, then we will do the same. It may mean on our way home, passing through the market. You didn't intend to do so in the first place, but you were told in the car park, there's nothing in the fridge. But we can quickly pass through Mpeni and pick up a few things. And consequently make... The lunch may be a little delayed because we're trying to cook something from scratch, but there will somehow finally be something for us to eat together and consequently have a meaningful time of fellowship together. So, readiness or lack of it is no excuse for us. The question is it from the heart? That's the question. Do we really want to exercise hospitality or not? Now, I've experienced this fairly often in my non-church related work. Thankfully, it's non-church related work. When in these sort of non-governmental organization circles, we need to make a trip. And often everybody doesn't have money. Nobody has money. So finally, you have to find money from some donors somewhere and so on, and you travel together. Yay, the amount of shopping, that aside. The same people who didn't have money. They are now asking you to carry some things because they are overweight when coming back. What's the issue? The issue is the will. They did not want to pay for that which has to do with this organization. But they are willing to pay to take, to hold half of the nation they went to back to their homes. We can be like that. The same person who's saying, no, there's no food, you know, we can't afford what, and so on this time. When you see what they've bought the following day, you think, I know husbands are very careful not to say, but what has happened here? So you just observe. Okay. It was just the will that was amiss. And brethren, this must be from the heart. And this is the thing I need to emphasize. From Abraham's example, it must be from the heart. When an old man is running, just know there's love here. There's love here. He is genuinely concerned and wants to minister. Oh, how I wish we could all be like Abraham here. You know, last time I talked about the hospitality of the Kobabeot brethren. And a number of you sort of went like this, because it is true. It's amazing the effort they make. You can see often that because you showed up unannounced, they were not ready for you. But you can't miss the fact that they are trying to engineer something that finally looks like a welcome meal for you. And sometimes they even have to get a number of families together. So others go and get this and others go and get that and so on. And finally you have quite a meal with quite some fellowship with so many other homes there. And because the heart wanted to minister through you, to show gratitude to God for the opportunity that providence has brought, they think about what to do in order to meet that immediate situation. In fact, there have been times when I've observed the wives in the car park consulting one another. And I know that that's about my stomach, what I'm seeing. And although finally I just jump into one vehicle, go to this particular one home, before long all those different women show up with their husbands and carrying all kinds of things, and we are able to have Christian fellowship in that. But that's only to do with Sunday afternoon meals. One can go much further. And I'm particularly concerned about the real needs of individuals. The individuals that, yes, show up here, and they are genuinely needing attention. I mean, I'm trying to imagine just this afternoon, somebody who was there being entertained came into my office and said, I want to give my life to the Lord today. And I'm thinking, if he was talking to somebody there, why didn't that person say, let's go home together? Why did he say that? Here's a soul on the cliff edge of salvation. Go home together. Even if it's jumping on a bus or getting into a car or whatever, go home together. Imagine what would have happened this afternoon. I won't tell you the end of the story, but my point is, these are real needs. And no, we can be spending so much time with one another, having, as I keep calling it, holy gossip, when eternal matters are needing attention just next to us. And because we've already got our afternoons set out, we can't make the necessary adjustments when these real, genuine needs are right in front of our eyes. What a loss. What a loss. Another group that I often think about are students. And I'm not particularly thinking about the Eagle's Nest young man. I'm thinking in terms of those who come into town for the first time. Lusaka is a frightening place. First of all, it's big. It's got so many cars. Everybody looks as busy as bees. Very easy for people to fall into wrong hands. And yet, these strangers, these vulnerable young people, are individuals that we can easily move a few things around and minister to them. They often come on a Sunday morning in at least one entire busload and stream into this place like bees. But surely, have we taken the time, the trouble, to find out their needs and to begin to minister to them? To do the quick, let's make this change. Quick, let's make that change. And what a difference it makes to these strangers. Let's quickly go on, because I'll come back to that in my next and final point. If we are truly exercising hospitality from the heart, we will want to be with the strangers. We will want to be with the strangers. What do I mean by that? You see, it's one thing to simply get money out of your pocket and say, here, I hope that meets your need. It's another to want to spend time with the people who are in that context, who are in the needy situation. And human beings are closed books. They don't just open up in the car park, just start opening up. They open up when someone has shown enough interest in them to spend time with them. Look at the situation here. Back to verse 8. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. And guess what happened soon after that? A question. Where's your wife? Where's your wife? It's because he was there. He could have simply said, look, provide for them and, you know, I'm off. He would have never heard this conversation. And even towards the end, listen to this, verse 16. When the men got up to leave, they looked down towards Sodom, and Abraham, listen to this, walked along with them to see them on their way. Verse 17. Then the Lord said, he was speaking to himself here, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Abraham will surely become a great and powerful nation, and all nations on earth will be blessed through him. For I've chosen him. It's going through the mind of the Lord as Abraham is walking with him, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. Then the Lord said, the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sins so grievous, that I'll go down and see if what they've done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. The men turned away and went towards Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. In other words, two out of the three proceeded. The third one remained with him. And hence, Abraham began to ask the questions that make up most of this remaining section. The point I want to emphasize is what I've just said. Human beings are closed books. Okay, we do have a few open ones who within 5 minutes, they will tell you all their earthly problems. But that's very rare. It's amazing how many people who come to church looking as if everything is okay. When you then take the time to be with them, I'm not saying give them what they want, wherever they are, but be with them. How many of them finally open up? And maybe even in open up, shed tears, sob, you'd think their hearts are about to break. Even said to yourself, hey, what have I done? But yes, you are ministering. They feel you have taken the time, the trouble to be with them, to ask the relevant questions. They therefore begin to open up concerning some of their most intimate secrets, because you are spending time with them. And it's not easy like it was here with the Lord. They're sort of thinking, now should I tell him? No. Maybe he might tell someone else. No. But I think I should tell him. You know, he seems to really be genuine. No. You know, they're going through all that, but you're warm. Personality, your interest, your love is shining through. And finally, they may ask a question that gives you the impression this is probably a problem they have, not somebody else. And as you begin to help, things begin to come out by being with them. See, if hospitality is to be from the heart, We need to be interested in the people long enough to be with them. It's possible to accommodate people and even feed them in the other room, so that you have no actual personal relationship with them whatsoever. It's very possible. Abraham could have done that. Hey, wife, prepare this. The guys are under that tree. Servant, kill this animal. They are over there. Take it over to them. I'm busy. That's not Christian hospitality. Christian hospitality is to spend time with them. And often, when it's without the context of fellowship, it's because it's been forced on people. You know, when people come to you and say, can you take these people and be with them? It's the pastor. Yes. Oh, no, we will. But you, it wasn't the overflow of your heart. I mean, how do you say no to pastor? How? So you have to say yes. And because you're not really interested in them, all the way, if it's in your car, all the way to the home, it's dead silent. Maybe you just ask, oh, so what's your name? John Banda. Okay. By the time you get home, what did you say your name was? And even when you get to the home, okay, this is the sitting room. And all of you bunch yourselves up into the kitchen. You're not really interested in being with the individuals, in really having fellowship with them. And sadly, that kind of fellowship, or rather hospitality, you know, the strangers, once they finally left, it's like they have survived a situation they don't want to ever find themselves in again. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And it's not just them who do not want such hospitality. Even the Lord doesn't want such hospitality. Because He wants that which is from the heart. That which connects. Where you are spending time together in having genuine fellowship and bonding, so that it's real. And I think that's what we see in Abraham. Clearly an example in the midst of all the theological issues that we often rush to this passage about, we are seeing here a picture that best suits the definition of hospitality according to, remember the Greek word, a lover of strangers. Here was one who genuinely loved these strangers, spent time with them, and consequently we saw that there was initiative, there was adjustment, and there was fellowship. I want to say that where hospitality is from the heart, these three will not be missing. Initiative, adjustment, and fellowship. And brethren, the reason why the Bible gives us these biographical sketches is so that we stop comparing ourselves with ourselves. It's very easy for us to become complacent by simply looking around and seeing the most inhospitable characters in the church and say, at least I'm better. It's very easy because we are children of our own day. But by going to examples like this, yes, there are cultural issues in this passage, yes, there was the Lord's own providence in seeking to reveal himself and his mind to Abraham. Yes, there are a lot of all those issues. But even when we take them away, when we refuse to get embroiled in them, we still find a challenge. And in this particular case, the challenge is obvious. Is our love for strangers from the heart? Is it? And if it is, here is an example for us to measure ourselves by. Because you see, on the day of judgment, it's these examples that God will measure us by. Remember what Jesus said when he was on earth, and the people around him were not responding appropriately to his ministry. He said, you know what? On the day of judgment, the people of Sidon and Tyre are going to come, or rather Sodom and Gomorrah, are going to come and condemn today's generation. Because here I am, look at the way you're treating me, surely, if those people had the opportunity you have today, they would not have suffered the judgment of God. He's taking a people from another generation. Don't think God is going to be more lenient on us. He won't. Biography challenges us. You know, I often think, and this is a slightly different subject, but it's still helpful. I always think that if John Calvin had a laptop, and internet, he would have done 1,000 more things than he did, and yet what he did is 1,000 times more than we are doing today. When all we do with the computer and the internet is to just be chatting with one another. How was it? And get a reply. It was fine. How was it? It was also fine. And in the whole evening, it was fine. But you know, she smiled at me. The whole evening. And then God will produce the John Calvins who had to take a feather and put it in ink. And when they've written one or two words, the ink has finished, and they have to put it in ink again in order to try and write. And then condemn us for wasted hours. Wasted hours when God gave us the tools. Generations will not be excused simply because they are comparing themselves to themselves within that same generation. No. Let us study biographies. Let us study examples. And let them challenge us out of our complacency. Realize, brethren, that we have many opportunities staring us in the face to exercise Christian hospitality. Many opportunities. And we need to take a hold of them. We need to do so with hearts that are filled with the love of God. And consequently bless many, many, many lives while God lends us breath. Amen.